So you must be an accountant by trade, Michael. Man. Sorry, man. Where do you go to school?
I went to Northwestern College, but the small one in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Good for you.
Which one are we going to?
The TCR one. There you go.
It did. No, he had it. He had it working in the last. Eventually. So moving on to the TCR, the TCR statute. There's a specific statute in code 490504.3 that provides for the TCR in North Dakota, authorizing recovery of investments, expenses of new and modified electric transmission facilities. Allows the return on the investment, current return on CWIP, and the TCR recovery stops when the costs have been recovered or included in rate base. We've been here before on the TCR, but so now we're going to move into our 2016 request. We're including 35 transmission projects, 10 new projects in the NSP system. Includes the net regional expansion criteria and benefits, the REC-B billing credits from MISO, recovers about $5.4 million in 2016, and the TCR rate will actually go down for customers from 0.2505 cents per kilowatt to 0.2340 cents per kilowatt. On the phone, David Brock can walk us through the new projects for 2016.
Okay, so the 10 new projects that I'll go through. Does everybody have the sheets for the projects? I can just go through them at a high level and answer any questions.
They have those sheets, yep.
Okay, so I think the first one on there is the Minot Load Serving Project. Is that the first one on the sheet?
Yep.
I'm going by the one I have at my place right now. So the Minot Load Serving Project is a new project to address some load serving deficiencies for the city of Minot and the localized area. The primary parts to this project is a new 19-mile, 230 kV transmission line between Great River Energy's McHenry Substation in Belva and a new substation located to the southeast of the city of Minot, a new 230 115 kV substation, and then NSP would route existing 115 lines into the substation to support the voltages and the capacity needs of the area. We are currently working with Basin Electric Power Cooperative to help address. Right now, they are in the process of putting forth their plan through the SPP open planning process, and we should know where they're at relatively soon on their open planning process. But we are proceeding with NSP's portion of the project. I guess I'll just open it up for any questions on this one, if there are any.
This is Brian. The only question I'd have is I know we've had SPP and MDU in discussion about, their how the costs will be allocated when they share facilities. I'm not too familiar with what you say the open planning process, but is the rate solidified between what SPP thinks they should charge for sharing facilities, or is that still a kind of open-ended question?
There really isn't necessarily sharing of facilities. It's in this particular case, each company is kind of, building and paying for their assets as part of the project. So we're not seeking cost recovery from SPP for NSP's portion and vice versa. So we're not really running into that particular issue.
Don't you have to, and I'm trying to make sure I don't get too far outside of my knowledge base here, but the way the electrons flow, isn't there sometimes when they interconnect in different areas, have all those things kind of been worked out on this? As the power flows, you might be flowing over their stuff and vice versa?
Well, if I remember correct, we set it up so that the contract paths between both companies will not be lost. So each side will have enough contract path to serve their load in the area, so there won't be an issue for transmission charges by either side.
Okay, thank you.
So when this one, the first one, the project requires an ADP and a PCNN from us? Are those applications coming, or will we be, are we approving rates before we get those applications?
As far as I know, yes, we will have to obtain a CPCN for the 230 KV portions of the project. As far as I know, I think we are just starting our community outreach, and once we engage the landowners on routing of the line, I think is when the CPCN would be turned in, but I'm not exactly sure on the timing of that.
Commissioner, I think this is one of those projects where an ADP isn't required. We're requesting recovery without having it.
And I'm expecting a siting application, too, from it.
Okay.
But it does seem kind of odd that we would approve a rate for something that we haven't done the siting on.
Well, expenditures are being made for it.
Okay.
And I think we can call it construction work in progress.
Okay.
So it doesn't require an ADP. This is
no.
Just a typo in the...
Yeah.
Well,
I'm looking at the summary you guys gave us, or somebody did.
$50 million, was that... Anything over $50 million you'd file before? Was that the number?
Well, and isn't, I think the cost is being shared. Is the $50 million our portion of that?
No, I'm talking about, you said you'd get an ATP in here for anything over.
Over $50 million or 50 miles on a transmission line, I think it was.
I think this is under that.
Yeah. The only reason I brought it up, I'm not looking for one, is that you guys said it was required, so.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, I'll move on to the second project on this, the major line rebuild project. So, this is a project to refurbish sections of line that are poor performing. So, if a line falls down, for instance, usually what we do when we go out there to fix the line is we'll take core samples and we inspect the cores for core rusting and things of that nature. And if the damage is starting to get to the point where the line is at risk for continued failures, we'll go ahead and proactively replace the lines to lower the risk of outages due to either poor structures or poor conductors. It's really kind of a asset renewal type of a project. I guess the way I try to describe it, it's like checking the treads on your tires. When the treads are getting worn, you replace the tires prior to the tire blowing out on the road. I guess there are any questions on that project?
I think we can move on to number three.
Yep, go ahead,
number
Dave.
Number three? Okay. Gleason Lake Substation. This is just a project to install a new 115 capacitor bank to address some low voltage issues that were observed in the western Twin Cities metro area, and it'll also require some minor rebuilds of some 115 kV double circuit transmission lines between Gleason Lake and Parker's Lake substation. I guess are the any particular questions on this one, but the basic gist is we have some low voltages around YZ in Minnesota for a single event, and we're addressing it through the addition of capacitor banks and some refurbishing of existing 115 double circuit KV lines.
So on all of these, whether it's at Minot or wherever this is, it's just using your normal percentages, like 5% is being applied to North Dakota consumers.
Okay. The system is all system investments.
Okay. I don't have any more questions on that one.
Okay.
The next project is a major galloping mitigation project, line 953. It's a line between South Dakota and southwestern Minnesota that has been experiencing heavy galloping due to the consistently heavy winds in the area and ice storms. So this project is doing a combination of reconductoring certain high-risk spans with twisted pair conductor and some spans that are not as risky with, I believe they're using phase spacers to control galloping on this line to reduce momentary outages that have been heavily experienced on this line, as well as conductor failures due to heavy galloping stresses. Any questions on that one?
Number five.
Okay, number five. Storm and emergency. I think this one's fairly self-explanatory, but these projects are to quickly restore services after failures on our system due to storms or other emergencies. So it's other emergency repairs. In all the jurisdictions, I guess I will open up that one for questions if there's anything more detailed needed.
This is just more of having I won't say a pot of money, but having some money available that you can go fix stuff when the storms hit, right?
Yes.
So this could be something that is after the fact, but you think it's better to have it up front?
Well, I think we always have, I believe, a little bit of money set aside for storm and emergency. Depending on what kind of year you have, sometimes the expenditures may exceed what we set aside. Like, I think the one I can think of is, I believe in the summer of 2013, there was a storm front that went through the Twin Cities with, I believe it was heavy straight line winds, and cause significant damage outages in the Twin Cities. So I think my guess is the pot of money wasn't big enough for something of that magnitude.
You know what? It makes sense. I'm just a kind of a ballpark. Like, what percentage of what you're asking for how do you figure out how much you're going to ask for of this slice? Is that a number somewhere that if you're asking for the $2 million from us, how much, what percentage does this little block come out to be? 62,000. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I had that question and then one more, though. So is that 62,000, is that based on you've had that much of these type of storm damages in the previous period of time and this gets you up to date, or you're asking for this because that's your projection for the next period of time?
So the way that was budgeted, David, how did you determine the amount that is included?
Oh, the determination, I believe it's on, it's based upon previous expenditures, like their average is what it's based off of.
I mean, are you short $62,000 from storms that have already occurred and this balances it? Or is this going to be $62,000 that you have in savings for the next $62,000 of damages that you get?
It would be our forecast of what we expect to incur based on historical averages.
Okay.
And so that's pretty much true for all of these numbers. We're looking at what we expect 2016 to be.
Right.
And then we'll true that up after 2016 to actuals.
But the others are assigned to certain projects where this is just, we don't know where exactly it'll be.
Okay. Any additional questions on storm and emergency?
I don't see any.
Okay. The end-of-life transformers, it's just like the lines. You know, we monitor the age and health of transformers on our system, and we try to proactively replace transformers prior to catastrophic failure.
Okay. So this is another one of those questions that really don't apply to what you're asking for or what our answer is going to be. But is it true that all these transformers have to come from overseas, that no one makes them in America anymore?
I do know a lot of the big power transformers, I do believe, come from overseas. I am familiar that at least some of the smaller ones are still made in the U.S., but I can't say for sure that all of them are necessarily sourced from overseas.
Okay. Thank you.
Maple River, this is an interconnection request from Minn Kota Power Cooperative. Minn Kota is converting some of their 69 kV, I believe, in Western Fargo to 115, and they've requested interconnection at our 115 kV sub. So we're accommodating their project. I don't know on too many of the details of what's driving their conversion. We'd have to ask Minn Kota that, but my guess is that they're seeing some low growth, and the 69 kV is just not adequate anymore to serve it.
The question I would ask is, I thought that they're requesting the interconnection increase, so why aren't they paying for it? If a generator pays, I mean, just in the previous case, we're talking about who causes it pays for it. So why are we paying? Why are you paying for what they need to do for their system?
Well, the portion that they're paying for most of it, but the portion that is our cost is a network upgrade. So with network upgrades, it's hard to assign the cost to a single customer. It's kind of a FERC uses like a common electron test. If you can prove that only one person puts power onto a piece of equipment, you could direct assign it. But if multiple users use the same equipment, I don't think we can direct assign all those costs to them.
Okay, so that makes sense. They're requesting it, but the upgrades you're doing more than they will benefit, so you're using the FERC method to assign costs?
Yeah, so okay. To dig down into the details a little bit on this.
That's okay. I don't need any more than that. That's
okay.
Enough for me. I just want to make sure there was some methodology ahead in play.
Yep, so.
I trust one of the FERC commissioners for sure, maybe all of them, so.
Okay, if there's no additional questions on the Maple River project, I'll move on to the Dean Lake. Okay, Dean Lake is a similar situation. We have to do some work on the 115 kV bus to accommodate another a transformer that has been requested to be added. So, you know, same story, just expansion of the 115 kV bus, common electrons.
Okay, any other questions before we go to 9? Keep rolling.
Okay, transmission line relocation, these are just projects that if we have assets that are in, I believe, public right-of-way, that if there's a highway expansion project, which is our general cause for these types of projects, we have to move the line out of the road expansions way. So that's what this program is for.
On this question, I was just in a meeting on one call earlier in the week, and for North Dakota, the North Dakota DOT budgets in there if public utilities have to move, that's part of their costs. So the way I'm understanding for North Dakota DOT anyway, if it's costs related to North Dakota projects, there's money in those, so why would we pay for them in North Dakota? That's something that I think that bears a little fleshing out. You tracking what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
So North Dakota Road gets expanded, and the expansion costs cause you to move your line. Those costs are paid for by DOT, not the public utility.
Yeah.
Include telephones and power lines.
I guess the only thing I'm not sure of if that's the same is held true in the other jurisdictions that we also serve.
Well, I'm not saying this is. I mean, there may be projects that are county projects that don't apply, and so they're but there's a definite discussion I was involved in that for certain DOT projects they put in money for relocating public utilities in North Dakota, and it was a big fight here last session. And Randy might know more about that than me, but there definitely is reimbursement that DOT has put in their funding to move public utilities.
I know that it's true that if we are outside of the road right away with our assets and we are forced to move, that usually the DOT in this case will reimburse for moving them. My understanding is if we are within those right-of-ways, then it is the utility cost. But I'm not the biggest expert on these types of right-of-way issues.
That answer kind of rings a bell to me. I think that's right, and that's why when these road projects occur and all the farmers are saying, no, put it out in the ditch where it's out of my way, the utilities always want to put it over in the farmer's land, so the next time the expansion occurs, they don't have to pay to move it again.
That's what I thought, too.
Okay, I still don't understand. I hear what everybody's saying, though, but so this money is for projects that would be in what block? I mean, have you fleshed out that you need all this? I mean,
where the utility is in the road right-of-way, and probably shouldn't have been one time, but it is.
So the utility would pay for that? So what would the DOT funding be for?
For?
We should probably flesh this out to get a good answer, because we're all speculating. Because your roads, your system may not run any of these, so it's just maybe just clarify what it means.
I think the DOT funding is for when they make the utility move, say, a utility pole that's over in the farmer's land. And
right. They're
taking more right-of-way.
Okay.
And so now it's burdening them.
It's one of those that we can sort out going forward, but it'd be sure great if you could give us some clarification. And then, Sarah, can you circle back around with DOT and ask? No, your name is on this memo. So last time I asked Jerry to do it, so.
That's on my name's on that memo.
Oh, your name's on this memo. Yeah. All right, I'm getting my memos mixed up. All right, Jerry, can you circle back around with DOT from our viewpoint, and then you guys do?
I'll check on it again. My thought is that the utilities don't want to put stuff in DOT right away because they'll have to pay to move it if DOT decides later to expand the road. And
that's all good. It's your thought, but let's figure out, because there was some heated discussion I was involved in with telephone facilities just on Monday about who's paying, and just to clarify what it is.
It would also be interesting to know whether the other jurisdictions are treating that differently.
Oh, like Minnesota or South Dakota, sure.
Okay, and the final new project is the Yankee Reactor. This project is to address voltage control issues in southwest Minnesota and northeast South Dakota, but we're installing a new set of switched reactors to help keep the voltages low when the wind production isn't as high and there's a lot of line charging on the system.
Okay, I don't have any questions on that. Do my colleagues either one?
Just to provide some perspective, these 10 projects you just went through total about $250,000 out of the whole $5 million.
Well, I was going to ask the question of that both your position and then the staff memo from Jerry talk about a 13% month decrease. So we're adding these projects. What was the I won't say miscalculation, but what was it we missed on last time around that still allowed this to be a decrease by adding in new projects?
The majority of the revenue requirements in the rate that was approved last year were for those the big CapEx 2020 projects, which are mostly, and they're not all in service, but they're mostly in service. So in 2016, the revenue requirements decrease because of the decrease in rate base due to additional rate-based deduction for accumulated depreciation. So even though we added...
You said that in Brian Kalk language.
I'm sorry. Okay. rate base is declining for the big projects that were already in the rider.
Okay.
And that decline in rate base caused a decrease in revenue requirements or the cost of those projects that was greater than the increase that was caused by adding these new projects.
Fair enough. Okay.
We depreciate the rate base gets smaller.
Right. As the, after a project goes to
so the depreciation exceeded what you're adding for new costs.
Yes. Yeah.
That's Brian Kalk language.
Well, the revenue requirements on it. Okay, sorry.
Thank you.
I was trying to be technically correct there.
What about that?
We don't speak accountant. That's not a language that we have.
Okay.
Also, if I could, we had this tracker initially approved with a zero rate in it.
And what year was that, Jerry? Because I'm trying to understand your memo here. And
the 2014 year.
Which we approved last year.
In effect, we weren't collecting money. And so they, in 2015, started out with a big tracker balance. Mm-hmm. And so the true-up account in 2015 was had a high rate on it.
Oh, okay. So to collect all of that.
2015, and now it's down to 162,000.
Okay.
Estimated what they expect after December, mm-hmm. And so that means we don't need as big of a true up factor now, going into 2016.
Why in your memo, Jerry, did you have some with asterisks on it? Discussion.
My fault. I should have taken those off. Those were not in the tracker before.
Okay.
And now they're being added this time.
All right.
Okay.
I had enough of
but all you said all of them are new.
No, the ones with the asterisks on the 10, I copied this from their filing, and they had a footnote with asterisks about how these were newly added into the... Even though they had stuff going on with them previously, they weren't in the tracking account. See, these
and how
are
is that different than the 10 new projects you say?
These are all new projects in the tracker account. The ones with asterisks had something going on with them previously,
oh.
And they just weren't collecting on them.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was going to take the asterisks off and forgot.
Okay. Before I forget, Allison, you offer this up?
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am. Great. Madam Chair, I have nothing else unless you have a, Randy, have anything?
Do you have any more questions? Okay. Staff, have anything more to say?
You have the memo and staff recommendation, my recommendation's approval.
Okay. Very good. Well, I think that concludes the discussion and the informal on case number PU15-684. And so I think that includes both agenda items. So we're adjourned.